I was very interested to hear you just now speaking of Buddhism as a way of supreme beauty.
Yes.
Because that's not the way that quite a lot of people have come to think about Buddhism. Some of them, both in the East and the West, they think of Buddhism as something rather grim and rather terrible and ascetic and life-denying and all that sort of thing. They don't see that Buddhism, in fact, yes, is a way of supreme beauty, because it's a way that leads to the development and cultivation and experience of states of mind which are supremely beautiful. So I think that is really, though not the usual one, a very appropriate way of describing Buddhism. And I remember in this connection that years ago, when I was in South India, I happened to be traveling through Madras, and I paid a visit to Adyar, the headquarters of the Theosophical Society. And I went along to a lecture which was given by Rukmini Devi Arundel, who was a famous exponent of Indian classical dance. I think she afterwards became president of the society for a while. But she gave a talk under the banyan tree there on Buddhism and beauty. And that really impressed me very deeply, because I think probably up to that time, I was only about 22 or 23 then, I hadn't myself thought of Buddhism so much in terms of beauty. But this is one of the things I've tried to say in the Religion of Art, or tried to show in the Religion of Art, that there is no incompatibility between Buddhism and beauty, between the purely, as it were, spiritual approach and the aesthetic approach to life or to reality, in as much as that approach, that aesthetic approach, does include a mediation of values, or consist above all in a mediation of higher spiritual values.
Beauty is the mark of the truth of the spiritual state. Speaking of India, I can describe to you my encounter with Buddhism in India, which of course is not a Buddhist country, except now there are many Buddhists moving in from outside. But I had been in Varanasi, Benares, and this was my first visit to India, by the way, and I thought I was prepared for everything, and I wasn't prepared for anything. One temple after another, I'd thought of the idols of India, the gods and goddesses of works of art, you see, that was all right. Instead of that, one found this absolutely naked confrontation with the effigies of Kali with her black face and her tongue, and of Shiva, you know, a curtain would be drawn and you would see this blood red, terrifying image that you couldn't make out quite what it was. They were awe-inspiring, they were powerful, but they were not beautiful. The idols, you know Benares, I'm sure.
Yes, yes.
And they're not beautiful, are they?
In a sense, they're not. In a way, they're not. They have
well,
a definite
they grow
appeal.
On you.
I'd say that they were sublime rather than beautiful.
Well, then the next day we went on to Sarnath.
Yes.
And there is the birthplace of Buddhism, where the Lord
Buddha's
Buddha preached
teaching.
His
yeah.
first sermon. And
yes.
there is this wonderful museum
yeah.
of these effigies
right.
of the Buddha, which are of. They are the most beautiful, surely you can say beautiful, icon of our humanity that has surely ever been produced in the world. They transcend perhaps all, with a few exceptions, the effigies of Jesus Christ, which are, as it were, highly individualized depictions, usually of human torture and suffering. Occasionally in the Greek church you get these superb pantocrators, which are Christ the King, but there is no uniformity, there is no, as it were, you cannot say the face of Jesus Christ is this or that, whereas what has travelled round the world and back, and I later went to Ajanta and Ellora, and so one after another of these depictions of the supreme beauty of the human spiritual reality in these effigies of the Buddha, which always speak the same language,
right.
however simple they are, even if they're carved in wood or stone or wherever it is, or in Cambodia or in the Musée Guimet or in the Far East where I've never been, but it is a creation. It's what Buddhism says is the face of the Buddha, is it not? Right.
One does find that that face of the Buddha speaks to people even who've never heard about Buddhism.
Oh, yes.
Who aren't especially interested in any spiritual path. I remember my own experience of Ajanta. This was many years ago when I saw the painting, the fresco of the famous Ajanta Buddha. I don't know if you happened to see that, but it's Padmapani. It's a 3/4 length figure looking down in compassion on the world and holding a blue lotus. And it seems to me at the time, and I think even reproductions do capture this to some extent, that it was really not possible to express in terms of a human face and a human smile that, well, as we say in the Buddhist tradition, transcendental compassion.
No words could express these things. It is beyond words.
Yes.
And it is the supreme icon of the higher humanity.
Anyway, we'd better not start talking about beyond words, otherwise our conversation may dry up.
But it is, if you like, this is art at its highest, at its highest value, that it is communicating. It is the vehicle. These wonderful Buddhas, or these village Buddhas, or wherever they are communicating through form, spiritual content, and that is what all art should be, this channel, this vehicle, this embodiment.
Yes, and beyond the Buddha's smile, we say, so depicted, well, there is only silence.
Well, that's another question. That's your side of the frontier, as it were, whereas mine is a loss on this side. But you cannot produce any living valid art. You cannot produce great art unless it is informed by this spiritual content.